Good morning and welcome to this episode of Step Into the Light. I am your host, Patty Sheen. Thank you for listening. On this show, we introduce listeners to people who have found their way out of the dark shadows of life and back to light, and those who, through various ministries and creative endeavors, lead others on their journey from darkness to light. Good morning again and welcome. My guest today, Jerry Dugan, is a speaker, author, and the host of Beyond the Rut, a podcast about helping you achieve your dreams and thrive in your faith, family, and career to experience a life beyond the rut. His book by the same name released in February of this year. Good morning, Jerry. Welcome to Step Into the Light.
Hey, Patty. I'm glad to be here. Thank you.
Well, it's a joy to have you here, Jerry. I've read your book and I really enjoyed it. In the book, you explain in quite a bit of detail what motivated you to write Beyond the Rut, to initiate the podcast. Can you pare that down a little bit for us here on the show and summarize what brought you to this point?
Yeah. Two quick answers on why the book Beyond the Rut. The first one is it was a bucket list item for me. One of my goals was to write a book that would help encourage specifically Christian men who are in the ages of 35 to 45 create a life worth living in their faith, their family, and their career. And so that checked off that box. But also, you know, Beyond the Rut is, in a sense, the manifesto for the podcast that's been going on for over 8 years as of a couple weeks ago. And so I wanted to be able to convey, you know, what is that show about in a book that could be consumed quickly so I could hand that out to folks and just further spread that message. So I guess that's really one answer, isn't it? It's not really two now that I think about that. But anyway.
Well, that's fine. That's fine. You gave us a good summary of what's going on, Jerry. Well, as I mentioned at the beginning of the show, I read the book, so I'm going to bring out some highlights and see if you will elaborate on them. Will you tell us about the five F's and why they are important in goal-setting endeavors?
Yes. So the five F's stand for faith, family, fitness, finances, and future possibilities or future growth, however you want to use that last F. And the reason why the original Beyond the Rut team came up with that set of five pillars or five lenses was that when we were working with men in Christian ministry who were struggling in life, they seemed to have everything that would check the box for success. They had the income, they had the job, they had the family, you know, the wife and the kids, the dog even, if they had a dog. But at the same time, they felt like they weren't really in alignment. Like, they felt empty. They felt like something was missing. And when we dug deeper with these guys, what we started to realize was that they were chasing what somebody else had described was success, to have a certain type of job in a certain type of field, to earn a certain amount of income. And once you achieve that, you were a man or you were successful. That isn't exactly how God wired us. You know, we're all uniquely created to live out, you know, his purpose and to reach people for him. And if that's the case, then why are we all trying to fit into a cookie cutter that some other guy came up with? So the five F's really helped us take a look at our own lives through that, the lenses of the five F's. So how I'm doing right now at work or the job I've got right now, how is that impacting my faith walk? How is it impacting my family life? How is it impacting my fitness levels, both emotionally and physically? What about finances? And then, you know, how is it helping me grow to be better than I was yesterday? And chances are, you know, if you're not feeling fulfilled in your job and you're pursuing this job because everybody told you you had to, it's probably taking a toll on one or more of those areas of your five F's. So then you've got the option of either A, hunker down where you are and make that job fit the five F's, you know, make improvements in yourself and how you see things or make improvements at work so that it isn't taking a toll on your faith or your family or your health. And then before I take on any kind of new venture, it's the same thing. How will this new project impact the five F's of my life? Because in the end, I want people to be able to say that they live their lives to their fullest, that as best they could, they never put their job ahead of their family, that they didn't put anything above their spouse, except for God, and not have any regrets. Still go out there and go after the thing they feel led to go after, but not at the cost of their faith in God, not at the cost of their family connections, not at the cost of their fitness levels. Finance is fourth in those five Fs because a lot of us are taught, go after the money. Go after the big paycheck. That's what you need. You gotta build up, you know, riches and wealth. I put that fourth on the list of the five Fs because although money is important, it is not more important than those first three things. Not more important than God. Not more important than your family. It serves your family. It serves God's kingdom. It serves your health and fitness. Then you also use some of it to fund your future growth. That's kind of the story behind the five Fs, each of those categories of your life. And sometimes people point out, like, you talk a lot about career, Jerry, but career's not in the five Fs. And I just reply to them, that's correct, because you're not defined by your job. You're defined by your character. And, you know, that's the thing to focus on, not your career, your title, because in the end, your job title's not going to matter.
I like it, Jerry. I really like those concepts. And, you know, I interviewed a lady several months back who actually her job, I didn't even know she had this job. I interviewed her because of her book. We got into a side discussion. She counsels people who have lost their job. The company hires her to counsel these people, and she has counsel people that have done some really bad things. I mean, like extorting money from a company. And the point that she was making was that most of these people are so unhappy in their job because they're not using their gifts. And that was what we talked about for a good part of that show, is that so many people are so poorly fitted to the job that they are in, and they just hate it. But once again, just like you brought up, they've been taught, go for the money, get a job, do something that's going to put food on the table, and they don't put their time into really exploring what gifts and talents they have and how they can use them in the job market. So, yeah, I love what you're saying, because it just dovetails so well with what we have discussed on the show before. So, Jerry, what is the advantage of, in your book, you mentioned looking up versus looking down, and you talk about how, I'll let you go ahead and follow up with that.
It's one of my favorite metaphors from that book because I'm an avid hiker. I love backpacking. More specifically, I love ultralight backpacking. So that's where you try to get your base weight of your pack below 10 pounds. So base weight is everything except for your food, your fuel for your stove, and your water. Those don't count towards your base weight. A typical backpacker has a base weight of about 20 to 25 pounds, and I'm one of those crazies that says, I'm going to get that to less than half, and then I'm going to go out into the woods. So in that, I remember one particular hike, and this was a few years back, and I remember it was around Lake Georgetown, so relatively flat, but lots of rocks, and I tripped over a couple of rocks initially because I was trying to, like, film a little video clip or take a photo to send home. I noticed a few miles into my hike that I was missing out on so many great views because I was always looking down and I was trying to avoid the rocks on the ground, and I didn't want to trip up anymore. And so in doing that and choosing this, you know, path of least resistance, to choose this route of what I thought was complete safety, I was actually missing a lot of great views of the lake, the hills, the trees in front of me. I even got scared by a deer a few times because I didn't see that I was coming up on a deer. That deer didn't know I was coming up on it until I snapped a twig or something, and then it bolted, and then we both screamed very loudly. I didn't know that deer could scream, but now I know. And that deer now knows I can scream. And I just realized I was missing out on so much. Like, what was the point of being out there if I wasn't going to enjoy the woods around me? So I found myself looking forward again. And it was something like from my Army days. Like, you know, in the military, when we're on patrol, on foot patrol, you don't just look down all the time. You have to scan everything around you. Now in the Army, you're scanning for threats. You're looking for things trying to kill you or things you're supposed to go out and take out. Sure. But I started, and I figured, you know, for the hike, though, it's the opposite. I'm not looking for threats as much. because there weren't any bears or mountain lions where I was hiking, just some deer that get as easily spooked like I do. And so I just realized, like, I need to see what's out here. Like, the whole reason I came out here was to see the vista views and the lake views and so on. So I needed to look forward and occasionally look down. And so I did that. And what I found was I was enjoying more of the hike. I was taking more photos. I was seeing deer long before they saw me. And I even saw some armadillo. I got to see people on their boats from a distance. It was just a much better hike because I decided to look forward. So I looked up, I looked forward, and I was able to see more of the trail, see more of the sights. And at some point I realized when I was writing the book, that was a great analogy for life, that a lot of us just put our head down and we hustle day in and day out. We're thinking about work the next day, or we're hustling to get a business off the ground. We work overtime because we think we need the money so badly. That's us looking down. And because we're looking down, we're missing out on things like our children's kindergarten graduation, our child's assembly at school, our child's sports events, you know, sending them off to prom. You know, we can miss all these things because we're so busy looking down and hustling to make a name for ourselves, to earn that extra buck. And if we just stopped doing that and looked up and looked forward instead, we would enjoy a lot more of what life had around us. So those moments for our family, those moments to be with our spouses, those moments to act in an act of kindness, to take action in kindness to help somebody out. We only capture those things because we took the time to look up and look forward. And even to think about the life we want to live, you know, looking forward is that analogy of, where do I want to go? Like, where do I really want my life to go that makes me feel like it'll have impact, not just for myself and my family, but also for God's kingdom. So that's one of my favorite sections of the book is when I think partly because I get to talk about hiking, but also because of that connecting of the dots to that idea that we should also live life that way, where we look up, look forward, and on occasion check down to see if there are any threats that'll trip us up, like rocks, or, you know, whatever the analogy is for the rocks in our lives.
And I truly believe, Jerry, you said you were able to relate the two when you were writing the book. And I think that that's a part of God's influence on us as writers. I call him a good friend. His name is Alan Arnold. I don't know if you know him, but he always talks about writing with the Creator God instead of just for the Creator God. And you expressing what you just did kind of makes me feel like, yeah, God brought that to light for you, that, hey, Jerry, this is what I'm trying to show you. Hiking is one of your favorite things to do, and you can apply this to what you're trying to tell people about their lives. So, yeah, I love it. That's neat. Jerry, talk about the Pareto principle. Share what that is, because I don't know.
Yeah, I think in the U.S. it's more popularly known as the 80-20 rule. It goes way back to Italy. Somebody somewhere was just looking at who owned the land. And, of course, the guy looking into it, his name is Pareto. And he realized that 80% of the land in Italy was owned by only 20% of the people in Italy. And from there, realized, oh, wow, it's not just in land ownership. In a lot of things, there is some variation of the Pareto principle in play. So like in church, if you look at the people on your volunteers or the people going to church, 80% of the work being done in your church is being done by less than 20% of the people in your church. And in fact, it's probably less than 5%. You have a few doing a lot, doing the bulk. In a lot of business processes, you can actually break things down and realize that 80% of your results are coming from about 20% of your activities. Not your efforts, but your activities. And so the application in Beyond the Rut is, what are the fewer things I can do that'll make the most impact in my life? Because we go back to the lens of the five F's, that if I want to spend more time worshiping and serving God and being in a community with my fellow church members, serving my family, being with my family, enjoying my family, and also enjoying better health, both mentally or emotionally, as well as physically, then I got to look at the few things that are getting me 80% of the way there, as opposed to all the things, because chances are there's a lot of things we're tied up in and we're just doing busy work because we thought that's just the way it's always been. But the reality is we can say no to things. And I'm a big fan of less is more. I know there are a lot of people out there that say, no, Jerry, more is more. But I think you can get a lot more done with less. And, you know, whether that means you take on minimalism, I don't know. That's up to you. I'm a minimalist at heart. Although, if you look around my apartment, that is not the case. especially my podcasting equipment. It's like, where did all that stuff come from? I don't know. Keep going. And my hiking gear. I got stoves I don't even use anymore.
If you were to come to my house, oh my goodness, I've lived here 50 years, and the thought of ever moving out is like horrific to think of all the stuff that I would have to get rid of. Oh my goodness. But I know what you mean about tasks that really don't move us forward. It's almost an obsession with me, Jerry. I keep track of like everything I spend. I have like a spreadsheet thingy, you know? Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know that that has done anything for me to, not that I have a problem with what I'm spending or I'm an overspender or anything, but I look at that and I think, you know, how many hours in a week do I spend writing all this stuff down? And in the long run, who cares? You know, I could be spending that time writing or doing something else, but it's become such a habit for me that it's really kind of terrible.
And that would depend on, like, you know, if it helps you stay on budget and it does help you plan those things, then it's like, that's perfectly fine, because that actually prevents you from, you know, things like overspending or not investing in enough for retirement, those kinds of things. But if you're going to it because you're really supposed to use that time to write towards your next book, but instead it's like, well, let me check the budget, let me see how things are going, and then you're definitely avoiding the thing. And I know this from experience, because that book, Beyond the Rut, I would be there at my computer getting ready to write, you know, 500 words for the day. And instead I'm like, what are the social media posts I need to put out for my podcast? Or what if I start, I know, I'll edit all the episodes for the next month. And it's like January 1st, and I'm thinking about February. It's like, no. So, yeah, there's some avoidance behaviors to be aware of as well.
I think that's part of it with me. We'll take a break here, where I remind listeners that you are listening to Step Into the Light with host Patty Sheen. My guest today is public speaker, author, and podcaster Jerry Dugan. Jerry hosts the podcast Beyond the Rut and has a book by the same name. If you would like to listen to this episode again, or hopefully refer it to friends and family, it is on archive. The most current 5 episodes can be found on the homepage at pattysheen.com. That is spelled PATTISHENE.com. The Blog Talk Radio tab at the top of the page will give you access to archived episodes. Under each episode is a More Information tab that provides links to guest website, social media, and other resource information. Let's return to our interview with Jerry. Jerry, we often refer to ourselves, sometimes we refer to other people as failures. What, in your estimation, constitutes quote unquote a failure? And is there really such a thing?
Oh man, I used to think there was, and I used to think that about myself all the time. I failed at this. I got cut from the baseball team when I was in college. Got cut from the baseball team when I was in high school. There's kind of a running theme here, right? then, you know, when I think about, you know, Jesus, you know, he brings dead things back to life. That was his message, like eternal life with God, you know, through me. It doesn't matter what you did. It's about what I can restore you and bring you into. And if I believe in someone like that, then why would I go around and call other people a failure? I think there are things that we do that would be a failure. Like if I aspired to be a public speaker, but never took any steps towards that, never really honed my craft, never really understood what my message was, who my audience is, you know, how does it align with God's calling? If I did none of those things either, then yeah, that venture in my life would be a failure, but I myself would not be a failure, because chances are I might do something that saves somebody else's life. And, you know, that's not a failure. I might say a thing or do some kind of polite gesture to someone that changes their outlook on life in general, and they just have a renewed sense of life in them. You know, that wouldn't come out of somebody who's a failure. So I think we can be somebody who experiences failure if we choose not to learn from our mistakes. So there's that. But to call somebody a failure, I wouldn't go there, only because I don't think it's ever too late. I mean, until you're dead. I mean, once that's it. You had your chance.
Yeah.
But until that moment, you can always, you know, do something to make your life, make somebody else's life better than it was a moment ago.
I tend to agree with that, Gary. I think that there's different degrees of success in people, and there's different measurements of success, and not everybody measures success in the way they should be measuring it. Just like we talked about earlier, the financial thing. You don't have to be in the top 10% of the nation's earners' salary level to be a success, because you can be a success in so many other ways.
Exactly. Yeah, I came back from Podcast Movement in Denver, Colorado. So a huge event, over 3,000 podcasters all geeking out about podcasting. There were a lot of us, plus the vendors who provide microphones and microphone arms and all kinds of equipment and software that supports this media. Also, on top of that, I noticed a lot of the people on the stages, some of them are very humble people. Like, you would not know how big their show really is by how they were serving their audiences. And then you had other people on the stage who made a big deal about the millions of downloads they get per episode. And it was almost like that made them better than the other people out there in the audience. I don't know if that was their intent to sound like that, but that was definitely how they sounded, which is why, like, I could just tell by the demeanor. I'm like, oh, no, this person's going to talk about downloads and how that's the measure of a successful show is downloads. And you see people fall into that trap in the podcasting space where you're only successful as a show if you're getting at least 50,000 downloads per episode after the first 7 days, and you got sponsorships going on and so on. That's the measure of success. And I'm like, well, geez, I'm a real long way from that, and my show must be a failure then. What I've noticed this time around at this podcast movement was that there were fewer people talking like that, because a number of things have happened, it turns out. A lot of people are getting fake downloads. They were hiring people to use their labs full of computer servers to create these fake pings on your podcast server to make it look like you had a lot of downloads. But when you dug deeper to the source information, like who listened to your show, and like 90% of your audience, if not more, was a browser. And it's like, that's malarkey, because we know that 60% of people listen on Apple Podcasts. It's probably more like 50%. And then others listen on Spotify and YouTube. So if the browser is your main download for your host, that's not exactly accurate. And so people have kind of backed off of that. But the whole thing, saying all that to say, yeah, in comparison, there we go. It's like comparison game, you know, living up to somebody else's. Yeah. You know, like somebody else's definition of success does not matter for you or for me or for the person listening in right now, because that's not your definition of success. That's not what God put on your heart. That's not your mission, to get as many downloads as that other guy, or to get your book sold to as many people as the other guy, or to make as much money as the other person. Like, your mission in life is to go carry out a certain thing that God's called you to do. If you're doing that, then do that. And you know, to close that whole gap around why is he talking about podcast movement? That Tuesday night was the second night I was there. I had dinner with some new friends. One of the folks, like, I was trying to figure out how I knew her, and I remembered, it's through Pod Pros Community with Alex Sanfilippo. You said that your friend, you shared an episode of my show with a friend of yours, and he really loved the show. And my friend Amanda Blackwood says, yeah, you saved my friend's life. He chose not to kill himself because of your show.
Wow.
And she told me that. I was already kind of like going through my own internal like imposter syndrome, inferiority complex, because I just spent the whole day in that expo hall. And to hear her say, your show saved my friend's life, he chose not to kill himself because of one of your episodes, I started crying right then and there, because I thought, I know the episode she's talking about, because she had told me about it before. And so I know that that episode was recorded 2 or 3 years ago, that I met that guy serving in Iraq in Operation Iraqi Freedom. And so I know that guy had gone through, not her friend, but my friend. And she just happened to come across an episode of my show that she liked, shared it with her friend, said, this might encourage you. Well, he went down the rabbit trail of other episodes of mine and came across this one where I'm talking with my firefighter friend who was medically released because of suicidal ideation. And instead of treating him and taking care of him, his fire department let him go. But when you talk to Ryan, he's like, but I have hope and I have a purpose here and I'm helping other people realize their fire departments need to support them. And he's leading this movement that is helping fire departments realize mental health is a real issue, especially for a department that sees death on a daily basis.
Right.
And they see the worst. Yeah. And so all those different thoughts coming together, I just realized, yeah, it doesn't matter what the other shows get for downloads. It doesn't matter if they're on a magazine cover, if they get an award. I did what my show is supposed to be doing. And it's keeping people from killing themselves. It's helping people find hope. And it may not be a big audience, but it's an audience. And it's the folks that God is bringing to that show to listen to it. And that's all God working. You know, the people that he brings to me are not of my doing. They come to me and I'm like, you are a good fit of who I'm trying to help. Let's get on there. And, you know, everything I know, everything I've learned, everything I've experienced, God's had a hand in it. So, yeah, that's all why I cried when that lady told me that my show saved somebody's life. And just, yeah, that's why I keep doing it.
Absolutely, Jerry. How can you top the power in that kind of success? You know, it's immeasurable.
Yeah. And then it makes it worth it. I mean,
absolutely. Oh, yeah. Yeah. And I know I probably don't have near as many downloads as you do on my show, but it just makes me feel so good when somebody messages me and says, hey, I've been listening to your show and I would really like to be a guest on it. And yeah. I think, wow, people really are out there listening. And yeah, I've had people say that, oh yeah, this show really impacted me in this way, not to the degree that you did with the person who was suicidal, but still, it does. It gives you a good feeling of, okay, maybe there is a reason why God has me doing this, even though sometimes you're talking and talking with your guests, and you're thinking, hello, is anybody out there?
Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly. And then just when you're ready to throw in the towel, somebody comes out of the woodwork and says, hey, I loved your episode on blank, or, you know, like the person reached out to you to be a guest and, you know, had listened to your show, but they had to find you and they found you and then take the time to listen to an episode and say, oh yeah, I could see how I could be a guest and help out in this way. So it's always uplifting when you get those calls.
Right. And I've always said too, I've probably said this even on here more than once, that you never know who that one person is going to be that's going to listen to an episode that may go on to impact 100,000 people with whatever he or she does. And just in the case of your firefighter, you know, who is now advocating for firefighters who have this issue with suicidal feelings. And it's very prominent in our society today. So, wow, I love to hear stories like that. That's great.
Yeah. I think one of the cool things with Ryan, I served with him in the Army, and I reached out to him because we needed a guest, and it was coming up on, at the time, I think it was Veterans Day a few years back, and I told the other guests of the show, there used to be two of us on the show, there used to be three of us on the show, but now it's just me, because the other two guys, they're like, oh, we got other things to do. But anyway, yeah, I told Brandon, the other host, I was like, hey, I've got this friend, we're coming up on Veterans Day. And my friend is a firefighter. He's, you know, been released because of depression, suicidal ideations. But I also served with him in Iraq in the Army, and I'd love for him to be a guest on our show to raise awareness for his cause. And so Brandon was like, all right, cool, let's have him on. So not only did we have him on our show, which I already told you the impact on somebody else's life years later that I never knew, that was Ryan's first interview on a podcast. He had heard podcasts, he listens to podcasts. He never thought that he would have a voice in podcasting. And because of our episode, somebody else heard it and reached out to him and said, hey, Ryan, I got a podcast. We know each other. We're both in the firefighting, you know, industry. Will you be on my show? So he's been on a number of other like YouTube shows, podcasts, and so on. all because of this cause, to raise awareness for this need for first responders to get the help they need. And I just thought, man, that, again, you can't compare that to downloads. That alone is just hitting the right people at the right time and opening the doors for the right people to get their message out. Yeah.
I agree 100%. And it's just like writing a book, which you have done. And I wrote a very, it's just a Christmas novella. It's nothing that's ever going to make it to the top of the charts on Amazon. But I've joked with people, and yet in a way I'm serious when I say, look, I was so excited to get this book out last November. I have given away more copies than I have sold. I don't think I've made enough money in royalties to fill my vehicle with a tank of gas, especially with prices today. And I think about how I could probably go get a meal on my royalties if I refuse dessert, you know. But the point is not that at all. The point is, what is the message? And when people read the book, and a friend stopped me, she passed me on the highway. I was at a stop sign. And as she came around the corner, she stopped and hollered and said, hey, I loved your book. Well, let me, you know, like, great. Okay. You know, that message meant something to her because my characters are a widow and a widower, and she's a widow. And I thought, oh, good. You know, the message reached her with what I wanted to say. So, yeah, to me, that's worth more than whatever a month in royalties, you know?
Yeah. So, you know, it made somebody's day, and. Yeah,
exactly.
I'm sure it's made other people's
days.
And
of course,
yeah.
Thank goodness writing is not my main means of, you know, paying the bills either. So I guess that makes a difference too. But
yeah.
I'm just blessed that God gave me that desire to want to do it. And hopefully I'll put some more work out there eventually. And if it makes me some nice royalties, great. And if not, so what, you know? So yeah, I think we're on the same page there. Gary, I want to talk about a topic that is very difficult for me because I can't do it. I have a terrible time doing it, and maybe you can help me do it. Why is writing down goals so important? I have a terrible time with sitting down with a planner and saying, I want this done by next week, and I want this done by next month, and in 5 years I want to be doing this.
Mm-hmm. Which is irony because you track your spending to a T with a spreadsheet. I just connected that quick dot right there. But for me, I know there are a lot of folks that don't like goals. They feel they're constraining and so on. And I use them like a guiding post in a sense. So there's some rules that I have around goals that have worked for me. That I picked up from other people. The reason why I love having goals written down is it takes something that's in your head that's nebulous and formless, and it becomes a creation. Just by simply writing it down on paper or typing it out on your computer or in your phone, you've now taken something that was formless and given it form. And if you rewrite it, make it a little bit tighter, give it a deadline, give some action items to it, you've now refined that form a bit more. And so from a creation standpoint, I love written goals because now I've taken an idea and I've made it real. It's like, oh, wow. Not only have I made it real, I've given it a deadline. And now I've got to plan out, how do I make this thing real? So like the book was a written goal that I ignored for 7 years. Once I paid attention to it and ask myself this important question. This is one of the things I learned, is that it's okay to cross a goal off your list if it really doesn't serve what you want to achieve or accomplish. I learned that from a real estate coach, oh man, a long time ago. And because, you know, sometimes we come up with a goal because we think that's what other people want to hear or that it'll impress other people. But deep down inside, that really isn't our thing. Like, I was a pre-med student when I went off to college. But I got a 2.1 GPA and I had to join the Army to see the world and get medical training because I was broke and I was tired of being in school. Well, years later, I realized being a doctor was never my dream. That was my mom's dream. You know, I never wrote down what I wanted to do with my life. And so that was kind of one of the revelations that made me realize I need to write what I want to do with my life. And it's okay if it changes over time. So that's what I like about goals. It becomes a creation the moment you write it down. And if you reference it on a regular basis, it'll guide you on your daily actions to build towards it. And if you're not making any progress towards it, you can ask yourself, hey, does this really align with my 5 F's? Does this align with my vision for my life? And if the answer is no, get that red pen and just cross it off and be happy. And now mm-hmm. you're freed up to go focus on the other goals that do matter. If there are too many goals, like me, I'll just jot a whole bunch down. I'll just look at the one or two goals I can really focus on and say, okay, 2023, 2024, whatever year it is when you're listening to this, this year will be a success for me if I get this one goal done or if I get closer to completing this goal. And then I go after it. And if I don't reach that goal, that's kind of also okay. So, like, back to what we were talking about around failure, I'll just do an analysis real quick. Like, all right, after action review is what we call them in the Army. So what went well? What did not go well? What helped us get towards the goal? What helped us not get towards the goal? And do I still want to pursue this goal? Is it still worth going after? And if so, then what improvements do I need to make to get there? You know, what adjustments do I make? It's okay if I didn't get it by the end of the year. I can always push that out. But that deadline is, it's arbitrary. It's made up by me, and I can remake it up and push it further down the road. So, like the book was a one-year project that took 8 years almost to write, or seven, actually. And so I'm the king of pushing deadlines out. And, you know, now my family and my friends looking in, they're like, man, this guy's knocking things out of the park. He's, you know, checking things off his bucket list left and right. But if you really saw behind the curtain, you'd see, hey, Jerry, did you just move the deadline for that goal out 6 months? Yes, I did. And wait a second. Did you just tone that down from, like, selling 10,000 copies to selling 500 copies? Yep, that happened too. And guess what? I just reached my goal. It's literally like, now what? Well, next year I'm going to sell 500 more and then 500 more. And then I'll look at a solution somewhere in there about how to boost that up. But it's not about the sales. It's about the message behind it and who does that message get to. And, you know, can I even afford to give them away? Like, you know, like you said, you've done. Yeah, I've done that too. And, you know, sometimes strategically, sometimes just like I sent a package off to a friend who wasn't able to go to Podcast Movement, but he had ordered a shirt. So I picked his shirt up for him. I'm like, oh, I got to mail this to you. And he's like, yeah, cool. Here's my address. And I'm putting that in the package. And I realized, wait, there's still ribbon here. And I look at my bookshelf and I've got one of the copies of my book and I just autograph it and I put that in there for him. And I send it off and I don't expect anything in return. If he says, thank you, great. If he reads it, even better. But yeah, I don't expect him to open any. Yeah, like I don't expect him to open any doors for me. I don't expect any like contracts out of it. That was just simply, hey, I had a copy here. I wanted you to have one. And here you go. Goals. That's why they're so important for me.
And I think I have a hard time with it, Jerry, because I'm such a procrastinator. So it's so easy for me to push those goals back all the time. Oh, I was going to get this done by the end of August. Oh, today's already the such and such of August. Oops, oh, I guess we got to move that one to September. Oh, yeah, well, okay, now it's September 25th. Gee, I'm not going to get that done in 5 days, you know? And it just goes on and on. So, well, that comes up to a whole different podcast subject, which is self-control and self-discipline and that whole realm of thinking and behaving and living your life. So, yeah, I know what you're saying, though. We can always strive to improve ourselves, right, Jerry? Every day. Every day we get another 24 hours to do something great. Jerry, when talking about trying to change our life and make it better, one of the points that you bring up is that we must replace old habits with something new. Otherwise, there's going to be that void and things just aren't going to work out. You talk about the 20-second rule and the Pomodoro technique to help us replace those old habits. Could you elaborate on that?
Yeah, and I love that section of the Bible. I know, so I referenced the verse. I can't quote it right off the bat, but essentially when you kick a demon out of your house, if you don't fill it in with anything good, that demon will come back and say, oh, hey, that house is still empty, and come back in, except that demon doesn't just come back in. It brings a bunch of buddies with it, and now it's even harder to get these demons out of your home. So then I cross that over to like habits. A bad habit, to just simply stop doing that habit is near impossible. You got to replace it with some other activity. So Charles Duhigg, The Power of Habit, talks about once you recognize what the trigger is for your habit, let that trigger now lead to a different action and then reward yourself for that. And so some of those things I put in the book. But the 20-second rule in particular helps you stop doing the things you don't want to do and start doing the things you do want to do while still leveraging these triggers. The idea, I forget who I got it from, but the idea is, I think it's Hal Elrod from The Miracle Morning. I could be wrong. However, 20-second rule basically says, if something takes us more than 20 seconds to do it, we tend not to do it. I don't know if that's unique to just the U.S. or if that's around the world or part of human nature in general. But yeah, something's going to take you longer than 20 seconds to do. Typically, you're going to turn away from it. And if it takes less than 20 seconds to do, you're likely going to do it, especially when you get that prompt or that trigger that gets that habit going. So the person I learned this from wanted to read more and watch TV less. So he took the remote for the TV because he wasn't allowed to throw it away. But he took the batteries out of the remote and he put them somewhere that was at least a 20-second walk away from where he was. And I think like the back flap or something for the remote was in a different room. So for him to watch TV, he has to go to one room to get the flap, another room to get the batteries, and then sit down and put the batteries in, then turn on the TV. That took up too much effort. And then to take its place, he put some books on the coffee table. So whenever he plopped down on the couch, that was kind of his trigger. He would find himself going for the remote, realize there are no batteries in the remote, see the books on the table, pick up a book and start reading. And he wound up reading more, watching a lot less TV. He was much more intentional about his TV watching. And so I kind of did the same thing where I want to go for a walk in the morning. My socks are in one room in the closet and my shoes are in another closet and my workout clothes are somewhere in the middle. But if I want to get up in the morning, get dressed and go out the door and go walking, I need to have all these pieces kind of in a flow. So, you know, my workout clothes, my socks are like right there at the bedside before I, you know, so when I wake up, there they are. So the last thing I do before I go to bed is make sure those are there. My shoes and my hat are by the door in the coat closet. So those are always there. And then if I want to go rucking with a weighted backpack, then that's also nearby. And so everything's in a flow. If I want to go out in the morning, that reduces all the resistance there. And if I don't do anything to deviate from that path, I follow that. Same with making coffee. If I want to make coffee in the morning, I put all the ingredients together in one place, the coffee grounds, the sugar, the what do you call that? I have an electric kettle. The thing, yeah, the thing. The coffee gets brewed in that. all of that is
coffee maker,
Keurig.
Do you have a Keurig?
Yes, I know. Well, I use an electric kettle, and then I do a pour over into a glass Chemex type of thing because it just makes it feel cooler when I do it. It's probably the same thing as doing a drip coffee machine thing.
Okay.
Anyway, I put all those things close together by the fridge, and so it just makes it easy. I don't get distracted, and I actually make my coffee in the morning that way. And so the 20-second rule is all about just, you know, putting everything together that you want to do so it takes less than 20 seconds to get to it, and then anything you want to stop doing, make it a chore to get done so that it's not worth even starting. So that's 20-second rule.
I really like that.
It's very helpful. Like I noticed on the days where my wife actually now doesn't do it anymore, but she would, you know, I'm doing air quotes. She'll put things away from me, which takes things out of the 20-second arena that I'm trying to accomplish. So then there have been days where she puts my socks away for me, and I'm like, no, I needed those. And I explained to her why. And I don't know why it took me all these years to, you know, we've been married 22 years, but I don't know why it took me so long to finally tell her, this is why I have the socks by the bedside. And this is why the shoes are here outside the closet instead of in the closet. And this is why all the coffee stuff is together. And this is why all these things are together. Like I finally like broke down and told her all these things. She's like, oh, that's how you get things done. I'm like, yeah, I just finally realized that. Cause we figure I probably have ADHD. My daughter got diagnosed with it and they say it's hereditary and chances are I'm the guy. Cause my daughter is pretty much me in girl form. So we're like, yeah, it's probably dad. And they see me do it, like where I just walk in the living room and I'm like, so what's up, guys? They're like, what brought you out here? I'm like, I don't remember. But hey, look, candy. It's like I'm on to something else. So that also ties in with the Pomodoro technique. So the Pomodoro timer is that tomato-shaped timer that they use in kitchens. And the idea is that you focus on one task for 25 minutes. You get one of those timers or just a timer, set it for 25 minutes, and you work on one task. Like you tell yourself, in the 25 minutes, I have to get this one thing done. And you just go for it. The moment that timer goes off, you take a break, no matter what, no matter where you are, take a break, set it for 5 minutes, get away from what you were doing, and just give yourself that cognitive break. And then after the 5 minutes, you can choose, all right, the next 25 minutes, I'll get right back to what I was working on, or it's time to move on to another task. And you set it for another 25 minutes, work on just one thing. So if your phone rings, if your email goes off, any of those things, you would let it go. You're focused on one thing. I started that about a year or so ago, and it just a game changer for me. You know, we joke at home, how do you get things done? And I still jokingly say, I have no idea. It's a miracle. But these two things are techniques that I have used time and again that just get me there, as well as checklists. I'm a big fan of checklists. And prioritizing those checklists. If I check everything off, I feel great. If not, it's like, well, I got tomorrow, I think. We'll find out in the morning. And,
yes.
And I just, you're right. And I just leave that checklist on my desk, and then I come back tomorrow and I reevaluate. Sometimes I carry those things over to today from yesterday, or I schedule it for later on in the month. Like I give it a deadline, but later. Or I realize I didn't need to get that done after all. That was something I felt like writing, and it sounded cool, but I really don't need it. I'll just go ahead and cross that off now, just like my goals. I'll just move some deadlines around and reprioritize. And I've gotten really comfortable with that. It's just reprioritizing my goals. It's like, you know, I thought that was an important thing yesterday. I thought about it. Not so important today. It's okay to move it off my plate. Yeah, and that was hard to let go of at first, or to embrace at first, but... It's kind of cool. It's like it gives you like a challenge. It's like, I've got 25 minutes to knock this out and get it done right. And then it's like, boom, I'm going for it. And mm-hmm. There's no real race, but deep down inside, it feels like there is. It's like, yeah, I got this. I'm going to win. And it's like, who are you racing? The time. The time.
Yeah, you're racing against yourself. Like some sports are kind of, you know, you're trying to beat your own time. Jerry, the last thing I would like to talk to you about, I know that you have a free download, and it is called Measure It to Make It. Talk to us about that, and where can our listeners find it?
Yeah, so I created a workbook a few years ago. My friend Brandon and I were talking about, you get what you inspect. You have progress because you're measuring progress. Like, you know you're making progress because you measure it. It's the same thing with achieving goals. Especially if it's a long-term goal, like you know you're getting closer because you're measuring your progress towards it. So measure it so that you can make it, measure it to make it. So that's available for free. I've had it out there for years, but I think even better, a full package. If you want to download the audiobook, Beyond the Rut, Create a Life Worth Living in Your Faith, Family, and Career, go to beyondtherut.com/audiobook. Not only will you have access to the audiobook, I think the landing page after you're done signing up, it gives you like 10 episodes to get started with my show. And Ooh. Then while you're listening to the audiobook, it'll tell you, hey, if you want Measure It to Make It, go to this link. If you want this, go to this link. So the audiobook will be your gateway to all the other freebies that I offer. So I say, yeah, get the audiobook. It takes 2 hours to listen to. 1 hour if you put me on chipmunk speed. And I've listened to it just a couple of times. It's funny. It cracks me up. I'm like, oh, wow, I sound funny when I sound like a chipmunk. Took that book and I read it. In fact, I recommend for anybody who wants to write a book, whether or not you do the audiobook right away, at least read it out loud and record it. Because I found 4 sentences that my editor and myself both missed twice that needed to be fixed. And I couldn't pick on her because I already paid her and, you know, she had done her job. And I wasn't mad at her because, you know, we're humans. But still, like, after all that work, we missed 4 sentences out of 126 pages that needed to be fixed. And it was reading the audiobook that I was able to do that.
So I know what you mean. And I even listened to it on the text to talk thing on Word. Read it back to myself with that before I ever send it. And I was like, wow, even with that, you can make mistakes. So, yeah, it's kind of scary how easy mistakes can slip by.
A friend of mine said, done is better than perfect. And
isn't that the truth?
Yeah, people are forgiving if you have like 1 or 2 typos in something these days. Now, like every other sentence has a typo, then people are like, wait.
I know exactly what you're saying. Jerry, you have shared so much information with us, and this has been just a delight to spend time with you and talk to you. I could probably talk to you all day and all evening, but I suppose we both have other things to do. So I want to thank you so much for spending time on the show today. You're a real blessing with your ministry, with your podcast and the book. Thank you so much.
Patty, it was a blast and great to talk with you again. And we both know for a fact we can definitely talk to each other all day if nobody comes in and reins us in. So,
absolutely,
not lying, guys.
Absolutely. Listeners, in closing, thank you so much for listening today. If you would like to listen to this show again, it is on archive. Go to my website, which is pattysheene.com. That's spelled PATTISHEENE.com. The most current 5 episodes are found right on the home page. You'll find the Blog Talk Radio tab at the top of the page. Click on that. It will give you a link to all the shows we have aired to date. Under each show is a more information tab. Click on that and you will find more information about our guests, such as website and social media contacts. I can also be found on Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, and Pinterest as Patty Sheene. Until next time, God bless you.